Bow down.
No, come on.
Any of you have any questions?
Going back to the question of death, what is death to you?
Deathlessness. I think maybe I've said it. Deathlessness is when you find that there is nothing to die. There is no one, nothing, nobody there which would die. Understand what I'm saying? Because when you say death, dying, there must be something that dies. So if you find that there is nobody, nothing that is to die, then you find deathlessness. Yeah, that's why we have problem, you know, realizing the impermanence, because we don't want to, because we think there is something permanent, so we have to kind of, we want to hold on to that, and therefore we think that impermanence is a problem. Yeah. Oh, it's impermanent, it changes, it's very bad, yeah? Because of this expectation of being permanent or being... We don't see it all totally permanent, but we have this inclination. You know, not intellectually we say it's permanent, but we have the inclination to be more, you know, permanent. So therefore we say, oh, impermanence, that's a shock. I think this is that's one big reason why we are not being able to see it clearly, because we delude ourselves. I mean, it's so clear that it's impermanent, but still we don't want to see it, because we wish it was not impermanent. So we only see what we wish want to see. That's why it's so necessary to take our, you know, blindfold off. And that needs courage sometimes. You know, it sometimes it's a little bit daunting, which is frightening. First time you say, oh, it's impermanent, everything changes, there's nothing remains. It kind of comes as a shock. But then, if you become a little bit more familiar with it, more understanding, I think it's not a shock. It's not a negative thing. It's not a, what can you say? It's not depressive, because it's realistic. You know, it's real. It's true. When you start to understand what really is, and see it, and dare to see it in its, you know, eye to eye to the fact, then I think it gives you some confidence, you know, because it's no use, you know, kind of trying to fake a fact which is not the fact, and you know. Actually, you know, behind your, a little bit deeper there, you know, behind your back, you know that it's not true. You know that things will not be the same all the time. You know that. But you don't want to consciously acknowledge that. So therefore, I think the more you can do that, the more you are able to face the fact, and the more you are actually, you understand the things, and I think you become much more in tune with the reality, the true nature of things. So therefore, I think it doesn't bring you suffering, but it brings more you know, what can you say, more peace. So therefore, I think it's really very important to make this transition of from the denying of all the facts of impermanence, and then accepting that everything is impermanent, in fact. And the more we can, you know, accept that, the more our life will be easier, I think. You can become much more tolerant. You can be much more, you know, broad-minded. You can be much more prepared to change and accepting, because you know, most of the problems, even in our kind of daily life, is coming because we think it's permanent. Yeah. Why so many fightings and tension in marriage? Because it's supposed to be for the whole life. Yeah. And then little bit becomes a big thing, yeah? Because it's a whole life. You know, now we are sitting here for, you know, for 1 hour or something like that. And so nobody has problem, because, you know, it's only for 1 hour. But if you say this is going to be where we are sitting for a whole year, I'm sure already we have problems, you know. Why are you sitting on the sofa? Why not me? No? So it's, you know, when we have that, it's all for all the time, then it becomes big thing, yeah? So this is, you know, why we have so much conflicts between all sorts of kind of things, is because of this sense of permanent, which we never know how long I'm going to live. Maybe I'm not going to live more than, you know, a few years, or maybe a few days even. But I'm kind of acting as if I'm going to live for, you know, 500 years. And then for little things, you know, people fight for, yeah. It's because we don't understand impermanent. If you did understand impermanent, there's no need to fight. There was once, anyway.
body, and that person might hurt you. You're feeling emotion, and when you, it's already passed, but your memory is still here. So you just keep go back and back. Even you tell yourself that, oh, indeed, the other person is present moment, but it's still stuck here. So what should I do?
The first of all, I think these things happening because you have some certain expectations. You have a certain expectations from your friend or your, you know, whoever that is, you know, you have an expectation. So you impose that expectation to others. Yeah? He should be like this, she should be like this, he should do like this, she should do like this, you know, they should do like this. You don't see what the things really are. You just want to impose this person to be like this, or like this, like that. And then we have a problem because it's not like that. What you impose on that person, it should be like this, like this, like this, like this. It's not like this. Because that's what you want to be. Yeah? And then when you find it's not like that, then you feel very bad. That's not right, no? Everybody is like yourself. We have selfishness. As a samsaric being, we have anger, we have greed, we have lots of ignorance, we have, you know, jealousy, we have pride, we have, you know, misunderstandings, we have, you know, we are all samsaric beings. So I think we have to see everybody as that, you know, with lots of, you know, problems, with lots of weaknesses, with lots of, you know, problems, samsaric way of reacting. So when you start to see like that, then you can't expect them to be perfect. You can't expect them to be something that you wish them to be. So therefore you expect not so high. No, your expectation is little. And then when, you know, persons don't do what, you know, something not so, you know, great, you can understand that. You know, you can understand that. And you can, you know, and if they do something good, little positive, you appreciate. Because if you expect somebody to be perfect, then if they do something good, you don't appreciate, because of course they're supposed to do that. They're supposed to be like that, you know, because they are perfect. They have to be. But if they do a little bit wrong, then it's a big thing. Yeah? How can they do such a thing? It's so terrible. So therefore, I think this view has to be changed, yeah? Not expect, just to see that everybody is like yourself. So if you expect your friends, from your friends, you don't expect too much, then I think you become a better friend. It can be long-lasting, because everybody makes mistakes, everybody has negative side, weaknesses and things like that. And then also, you know, if they do something not so right, not so nice, there's no, you know, it's they haven't made a contract that I will do everything right, no? So why can't they make mistakes? Why can't they do something not so nice also? You know, as you can do something not so nice sometimes, everybody has the, you know, everybody has this samsaric, you know, negative habitual tendency to do negative things. So if they do, it's not nice, it's not good, but it is not that they have the compulsion. They have to be compulsorily doing only good things. Yeah? So this understanding is, I think, very, very important. And this is, I think, very important for the life, you know, to expect from other people. That we appreciate good things, little good things, small good things also. And then also, you know, to be able to not make yourself suffer because somebody did something wrong. Yeah? If somebody, you like somebody and somebody doesn't like you, that's possible, why not? Yeah? So, let him be. Yeah? There's no need for you to completely get devastated because somebody didn't like you. Yeah? There are 100 people maybe who would like you. Yeah? You can't make everybody like you or something like that. So therefore I think it's very, very important to understand this clearly. What anybody does should not become a cause of your own suffering. What somebody else does or does not do should not become a cause of my suffering. You know? Then you will be suffering all the time. Yeah? So therefore, I think this is very important to understand this way. And we already have lots of problems. Don't make everybody's kind of problems a cause of my own suffering. I think this is important. And then also, we also have this this tendency to see the, you know, faults of others and in a magnifying glass, but qualities not much, you know. I think we should make an effort to see the qualities of other people also, because otherwise we cannot respect other people. Yeah. If we have to look for the good qualities of other people, they have different things, but little bit. When we can see the good qualities of other people, then we learn. You know, what I learn is when I see good qualities of other people. If I don't see good qualities, I can never learn. So I make a habit of trying to look for the positive sides and good qualities of others, then my respect of other people grows, and at the same time my learning grows, you know. So if I, you know, and then I naturally show respect to other things and other people, and you know. So this I think is a very important thing that we have to do. We have to work on ourselves to see the good qualities of other people, other traditions, other, you know, anything, you know, so that then, you know, we can become much more respectful and honoring the positive sides of other people. Everybody is not same, but you know, everybody has some special things, and to recognize that, to respect that, to, you know, and to learn from that is, I think, an important thing to do.
Yeah, we will say, Lord Buddha's teaching is to teach us to transcend from samsara. If this teaching is correct, then I have one doubt. According to Tibetan practice, especially the lineage tradition, that is, they are trying to find a successor to be followed by the predecessor when he dies. And then certain books even say when that leader, before his death, he even expressed his vow or resolution to come back, to be reborn again, in order to continue this lineage. So that may be against Lord Buddha's teaching?
No. Now, first there are two things, you know, samsara and this world. These two things. Samsara is not same as one as the world. If samsara is the only world, then Buddha didn't leave world. You know, Buddha, when he became enlightened, he went out of samsara, but he was still in the world. And he was teaching the people in the world to get them out of samsara. You know, but he was already out of samsara. No? So therefore, samsara is a state of mind. State of mind where we, you know, we react with aversion, attachment, and we have suffering and pain and problem and no peace. You know, that's the samsaric state of mind. When we transcend that, if we can find peace in our mind, we can find, you know, lasting peace and happiness in ourselves, wherever we are, that's transcending the samsara, yeah? Now, there are great, you know, many, many beings who wants to help beings, help other people. Like Buddha Sakyamuni, before he became a Buddha, he was called Bodhisattva. The concept of Bodhisattva is like Konyen, you know, Tara and things like that. There are many, many great Bodhisattvas. Now Bodhisattvas, the understanding is that I would not only want to liberate myself from samsara. I want to liberate myself from samsara, but I want to help to liberate all the beings from samsara. And then there are three different kinds of bodhisattvas, aspirations. One type is what they call the king-like bodhisattvas. They say that I want to liberate myself and all the sentient beings from samsara, so I will first liberate myself. And once I am liberated, once I am out of samsara, then I help other beings. This is called the king-like, because king, you know what they do, the king, first I make myself very, you know, luxurious and very well-to-do and all the taxes and everything, very rich, and then I also kind of help my my subjects a little bit, you know, out of poverty and things like that. So this is the first type. The second type is what we call as the captain-like bodhisattva. That is that this person says, I want to help all sentient beings, but I will do it together. I will also go along with them, and I also liberate them and help them. So captain-like, captain, you know, goes in the sea, and he takes his passengers with him, and if he gets across this, you know, the ocean, then everybody gets across. If he doesn't get, then nobody gets. So in the same way, you know, I want to take along everybody with me. But there is others who is called like shepherd-like bodhisattva. Those people say, you know, I would like to bring all the sentient beings to liberation, to freedom first. Only after I have been able to help them all, then only I would like to become enlightened, not before. You know? So these kind of beings doesn't want to get enlightened, want to help other beings to get enlightened. So this is like Konyen and Tara and things like that. So they want to come be in the samsara again and again, not in the samsara, in the world again and again. All the bodhisattvas in the world again and again, but especially them. And then so therefore they, you know, they help beings. It's not that they are not enlightened, they are all enlightened. I mean, it's not that after you are enlightened you cannot help, that's not the truth. After you are enlightened also you can help, you know. But then this concept of, you know, this Tibetan Buddhist recognizing the reincarnations, that's just a system, you know, Tibetan system. Throughout the world, these great beings are coming and they are being born again and again and again, either in this world, in another world, or in anywhere. This is something from Buddhist point of view happening anyway. But Tibet made a special kind of a custom or system, you know. It had happened 900 years ago this year. The first in the Karmapa, the one Lama called Karmapa, later on Karmapa, before he was not called Karmapa. He said that, you know, I will come back again. So then, you know, after few years he died, a boy came and says, I am the Karmapa. So he kind of, people were not so, you know, a little bit doubtful. Oh yeah, you are Karmapa, yeah, okay, you know, like that. But then he became quite special, and then, you know, he performed miracles, he could perform miracles, and, you know, this is during the time of Kublai Khan. So he was taken to the, you know, there is a story by, you know, Marco Polo, that the king of Kublai Khan wanted, brought all the from different parts of the world, the Christians, the Muslims, everybody, and asked them to perform miracles. And the Tibetans, you know, they kind of put the, let the cup go on its own, like this, and then came to the mouth and he drank. And that was the Karmapa who did this, second Karmapa. And then he became the teacher, and then he also didn't do what the emperor wanted to, so he imprisoned him, and in all those stories, but anyway. And then he, when he died, his student called Toto Ojenpa, recognized his, you know, his rebirth. There was a kind of pregnant woman coming, and then he said, the baby that you are carrying is my teacher, the Karmapa. So from then on was the system of recognizing another person as the rebirth of another person by third person started happening in Tibet. And then there were lots of others like Dalai Lama and Panchen Lama and many others. So the Tibet is full of tulkus. Yeah, I'm also recognized as a tulku. I don't know I am or not, maybe I'm not, but I'm recognized as such. Yeah, and there are lots of, you know, lots of kind of tulkus. Some may be real ones, some may be not so real ones. You know, who knows, yeah? but that's the, you know, it's a system. And, you know, when a lama, high lama dies, when a good lama, a lama who is really good in his practice and who is really good to his students, and a successful lama dies, then his students try to find his next reincarnation. And then they sometimes find a small boy and then make him, they train him, and then they, you know, and he becomes the next lama. And sometimes he's a very good one, sometimes not so good one, you know. But most of the time it has been okay, I think, because in Tibet they have a big respect for the tulkus. I think it is also because that it's a way of training, I think. You know, when a little child comes and then he says, oh, you are the Lord of Compassion. Yeah. You are, you know, the next life of a great master, you know. You have been so nice, you have been so kind, you have been so learned. Then the child thinks, oh, am I? I am. I am nice, I am kind, I am good. Yeah, then I become that, I think. Huh? I think it's a, you know, if you tell a child that, you know, you are bad all the time, become bad, no? You are good one all the time, become a little better good, no? I think that also is something, I think. I don't know, but you know, but that's how it happened. So there are lots of tulkus. The Tibet is full of tulkus. Some are like that. But recently Panchen Lama, the last Panchen Lama said that we have to think how to recognize tulkus in future. maybe it's not so good to recognize small children because it takes a long time to educate them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some time to be, you know, working. But then again he dies and then long gap before he, like Dalai Lama, you know. Tibet had so much problems because of the absence of the Dalai Lama, you know. Dalai Lama is born, he goes into long time and then he becomes active. But then, you know, then it's very good for a while when he's living, but many Dalai Lamas didn't live long. So he dies and then again, big gap. And then all sorts of problematic people come in and then creates lots of troubles, things like that. So you are saying that, this Panchen Lama was saying, you know, maybe we should not recognize small children. We should recognize, you know, already educated people. If they are really educated and very nice, then maybe we should recognize them. And he said that it's not necessary that he should be exactly the same Lama. Because he told the story. He told the story. You want to hear the story? He said that once a Lama died, a good Lama died, a kind of Lama died, and then his students went to see a very, very, you know, great Lama, a meditator in the cave, and says, please, try to find our Lama. We need him in the monastery. And then the Lama kind of did meditation, whatever he did, he wrote a letter and said, if you find this boy, so and so name and so father and mother, then it will be good for your monastery. And then they went and found that. But then they said, this wedding, you know, it doesn't sound that good. You said that it will be good for your monastery. You don't say that it's the exact tulku of this Lama. And then the Lama said, doesn't matter about the exact tulku, this will be good for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said, no, we just don't want somebody, you know, just good for. We want the right one, the exact one, you know, of our tulku's reincarnation. Then he says, if that's the case, then it's easy. How? Well, then you can find yourself. He said, how can we find ourselves? He says, you do one thing, you know, I see that you, near your monastery, there's a big kind of a grassland. In that grassland, you make a high throne, and then you make music, and then somebody call loudly by the name of this Lama who died, and then he will come. So they did that. They were making a big throne, and then they were making music, and then somebody was calling at the top of his voice by the name of this Lama who died. And after some time, a little donkey came running and climbed on top of the throne, and oh, amen. Then the Lama said, that's the one. Now you want the real one or the one that's good for your monastery? I think they took the one with good So anyway, yeah, that's the thing. Mm-hmm.
The word Panchen refers to the rank of the Lama cycle.
Panchen means the abbreviation of Pandita, the Sanskrit word Pandita, which means, you know, highly learned, the great Pandita. Chen is great, the great Pandita. So he is a kind of a name but title, Panchen Lama.
Is he a Bodhisattva?
It has to be.
Has to be.
Supposed to be. Everybody, in Mahayana Buddhism, everybody tries to be a Bodhisattva. Yeah? So, of course, Panchen Lama must be.
no more questions. Everybody is enlightened.
I think everybody is totally full and then you can leave it.
More than bliss.
Yes. I don't think we can meditate emptiness when we are so full. Otherwise we'll go to sleep. Huh? I've already said what I have to say.
Actually, it's not a question really. Before we all go, I would just like on everyone's behalf to thank Ram for his hospitality and the wonderful food and the generosity. So thank you, Ram.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rinpoche, for being here, and thank everyone. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to practice Paramita of Generosity. Yeah. And thank some of us have brought some food and sweets as well, and drove Rinpoche here, and we'll be giving him a ride. So, thank you, everyone, you know, for making this happen, and I hope it will happen again.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. So okay, we can 10 minutes. We can just, you know, don't snore so loudly. Which story? I know I have lots of children's stories because I worked. For 8 years as a children's book writer, you know, textbook writer. And for 8 long years, I had the whole library for myself and nothing else to do but to read text, you know, stories and collect stories, yeah. And then, you know, stories you don't forget so easily. And also, right from the childhood, I was running after stories, you know. I had some people who were working for us, you know, and I always run and ask them to tell a story. And then when the story finished, I had them to tell me again from the beginning. So I heard one story maybe 100 times.
Well, you are a good storyteller.
I know many stories.
You like the donkey one.
I like the donkey one. Yeah. And India has this tradition of doing the whole education through stories. There was a king, and he had 5 princes. They were so wild that nobody could educate them. One teacher came and, you know, he had to leave in a few days, and they were so naughty and so, you know, uncontrollable. And then the king made an announcement that if anybody can come and educate these children, then I will reward him with the, you know, with the province and lots of, you know, wealth and power and everything. But nobody was daring to come forward because these princes were so notorious. Then at last one hermit came after many many months. And he says, I will be able to educate your children, but he said, I have a condition. I have to take them away into the forest. So the king had to agree, and then he took them into his forest. And then each day he told them a story. And then after I don't know how many months, he brought them back and said, now your children are educated, so no problem. So he told them, you know, stories, you know, only stories, you know. And through that, educated them completely. And these stories are called Panchatantra stories. So these stories are still told in India, but I don't know whether they are used as education, a means of education now, but like that. So they have been using stories to educate people. Buddha also used the stories, the Jataka stories. You know, he had lots of stories called Jataka stories, which he used to tell and then teach the Dharma through that. I mean, this it's mainly talking, yeah, it's all stories, but all, you know, telling a kind of what can I say, how how he practiced the six paramitas mainly. So there are, you know, stories on how to generate more generosity, how to live more in a perfect, you know, conduct, with patience, with, you know, like that, you know. So you want to listen to a Jataka story? Maybe I tell you the first Jataka story that Buddha told. Because when Buddha attained Nirvana, enlightenment, and then he went to Sarnath after 7 weeks and gave his first teaching, first Dharma Chakra in Sarnath, to 5 people. He knew them before, to 5 people. And when he gave this teaching on the Four Noble Truths, the first, the one called Kondinya, became an arhat. So later on, people ask him, you know, of all the people, you know, why did you teach these first 5 people only? And of all these 5, why this one person became, you know, the first one to realize the truth and get, you know, arahatkat? And Buddha said, it's because of my dedication and his connection with the Bodhisattva, his negative connection with Bodhisattva. Then he gave this story. He said that long, long time ago, many, many centuries ago, there was a king, and then this king lived in the kind of foothills of the Himalayas, and he wanted to hunt animals. And at that time, in that area, there lived a hermit who liked to meditate on tolerance and patience. And he was called the one who is meditating on patience. So this hermit who was patient meditator was in that forest, and then the king one day came and kind of camped near that hermit, and the king went to hunt. And meanwhile, his queens and his kind of woman folk went into the forest to pluck flowers and, you know, to walk. And they found this rishi. And he was a very impressive rishi and very, you know, good looking and impressive, because if you are patient, you become good looking. You know that. Keep it in your mind. So they kind of, you know, made offerings to him, and flowers and fruits, and then he, you know, asked for teaching and things like that. So meanwhile, the king came back, but he came back empty-handed and a little bit hungry also, I think. So he says, "Where are my, you know, queens and everybody?" So they said that, "Well, they are with the hermit there." So he went to where the hermit was, and he saw his queens, you know, kind of surrounding this good-looking man, and, you know, like this, and he was jealous, and he was, you know, unhappy. And then he went to this hermit and says, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I am meditating on patience." And then he took out his knife, sword, and he started to cut him into pieces and said, are you still patient? Are you like that?" So he died, and while he dying, he said that, "You cut all my, you know, body into pieces, and you kind of killed me. Now I make this promise, I make this dedication, that when I become Buddha, may you be the first one that I cut all your negativity in the same way as you cut my body now. And may you be the first one that I totally liberate and make you the Arhat." And then he died. And of course, the king, because of his bad actions, he had to go into all sorts of negative realms and hell realms, everything, for a long, long time. But at the end, you know, because of this dedication, you know, he was also the first one to be able to be liberated by this. So this, so that's why he was the first one to get arhathood. So this is the Buddha said. So this is one of the, you know, Jataka stories. So all the Jataka stories are a little bit similar like that. But the Buddha, you know, that time he was a rishi who was meditating on patience. But sometimes he's an animal, sometimes he's, you know, all sorts of things. He's usually never a Buddhist. It's very, very few times that he's a Buddhist. He's all sorts of things.
I think, do we have more time, or do we have to end here?
Well, time is a relative thing.
Okay. I have one question.
Okay. Then you can cut this, and then we can go.
In the Heart Sutra, it says form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And so far you have taught us how form is emptiness. But how do we actualize that emptiness is form? First part, I think you have explained quite clearly, but the emptiness is form that I cannot properly actualize.
Actually, I think it's not that there is something else that emptiness is form, you know. If you said that emptiness, form is emptiness, then people think that, you know, this form is kind of emptiness, so therefore there is something called emptiness. You know, the form is no form, you know, the emptiness. Form becomes emptiness, and that's emptiness is nothingness. To get rid of the idea that emptiness is nothingness, then he says emptiness is form. Yeah? Understand what I'm saying? Because it's not saying that the, you know, the form is, you know, kind of, when you realize emptiness, then the form dissolves. It's not like that. It's not saying that this, all the things, the forms and everything that we see, this is there and then you don't see them, then they become emptiness. It's not like that. How all these things exist? You know, that's the emptiness. How all this exists? Not the absence of this absence, but, you know, so while the form is seen, at that very time, it's emptiness, because the form exists in a way that is interdependently and dependently arising and relatively, so that's the emptiness is form. Yeah? The Karmapa so highly regarded because he's the first bhikkhu, you know. He's the one who started the lineage of this, the system of recognizing the bhikkhus, and not only that, but he was last 16 of Karmapas. They're all very great masters. All of them were masters who were revered by all schools of Tibetan Buddhism, not just one school of, you know, Tibetan Buddhism, but everybody. And all of them were very non-sectarian, all of them were very, you know, not only known, but also, you know, they all grew in their own way, very great masters. That's why they're very highly respected all over Tibet. There are two Karmapas, actually there are three. There's three. One is, you know, who kind of proclaims himself. He's in Sikkim. So another one is recognized by Shamapa. And another one is recognized by the Dalai Lama, which is kind of recognized by all other Tibetans. So officially that's the Karmapa. There is no distribution. I don't think there is a distribution of things like that. Yeah. There is nothing called a distribution of responsibilities or anything like that. It's like that.
I have it on a downloaded YouTube video that the Dalai Lama has sort of passed the torch.
Not exactly like that. Well, I mean, there was this video clip, you know,
yeah,
I've also seen, but I mean, it's not officially, you know, it's not. But it's like this, you know, this. What can you say? I think there is nothing like that. I mean, Dalai Lama often says these days that even if he passes away, there are many young lamas who can kind of continue the spiritual leadership and things like that. And I think he refers to Karmapa and others also, not only Karmapa. But Tibetan people have a very strong, particularly this Karmapa, they have a very strong, what can you say, a strong faith in him. Not only because he's Karmapa, but also he ran away from China, you know, at a very early age, you know, when he was only 14 years old. Although he was treated very well by Chinese, you know, because they needed him. There was nobody, you know, Panchen Lama from the Chinese, Panchen Lama is not recognized by Tibetans, and then the Dalai Lama, so there is no High Lama, so the Karmapa is the the only High Lama who has been recognized by Dalai Lama also and all the Tibetans. And then he just ran away, you know, and it was a big, what can you say, big setback for the Chinese. So they, you know, lost their face, and you know, so the Tibetans really liked it. Yeah. But then Chinese, you know, is doing lots of things to discredit him. Even now, you know, they said that, oh, we just sent him, you know, we just sent him to bring back his black hat. So there are people in the Indian government who says maybe he's a Chinese spy. Even now there's lots of things going on. Recently they found lots of Chinese currency in his monastery, because he has lots of Chinese students also, because he speaks Chinese very well, so he can teach in Chinese. And so therefore he has lots of Chinese students he has. So they come, and you know, of course Chinese are very generous, you know, they never come to Lama without a red envelope. So he has Chinese. So the Chinese Indian journalists have been saying, oh, he must be a Chinese spy because he has lots of Chinese money. So it's lots of problem going on. Okay. It's what?
Possession.
Okay,
what? Possession.
Okay, can you explain the phenomenon? Actually, I did explain a little bit, but Dukkha is when a Lama dies, when a good Lama dies, a good Lama who has many good students dies. Let us put it like this. Then his students try to get his rebirth, you know. And then they try to find a very great Lama like Dalai Lama or Kamapa or something like that, and say, you know, our Lama died, can you find his reincarnation? Can you find his rebirth? And sometimes it takes long time, sometimes not long time. But then, you know, try to wait for some kind of indication. And then they write sometimes, you know. There are many different, there's no tradition really, there's no tradition. It's not a tradition, what can you say, foretell, you know, it's the spiritual power. So you have to get some indication. Then they write, you know, this, you go and try to find in this location a child of this age with the father with this name, or mother this name, or family this type, or something, you know, to indicate some indications. And then they have to go and try to find. So sometimes it is easy to find, sometimes it's very difficult to find, sometimes they don't find many times. And then sometimes they get kind of several names, it's kind of a little bit similar. And then they bring back and then confirm with the Lama, and then the Lama kind of makes the confirmation, and then he is recognized as the Dukkha of that. Sometimes they also do this, like His Holiness Dalai Lama. They try to ask the young one to recognize the positions of his previous and things like that. Some tests sometimes done, sometimes not. And then he is kind of taken as the reincarnation. And then he is educated in the normal way. Sometimes with a more strict and individual teacher. The Dukkhas sometimes get a special teacher, you know, of their own. So they are trained, and that's it. It's not a position. It's not not, it's not something that happens sometimes and not sometimes, it's not that. It's just another. And then some tulkus are very special, very learned, very talented, very powerful, very, you know, and some, nothing. Very ordinary. No, this depends on how highly realized that Lama Buddha is. Okay then, thank you very, very much. And thank you Ram, and thank you everybody for this nice time, and all my best. And let us dedicate.
So now the Damji Zipanye, Tony Nibe, Dana Pai, Sigana Jeva Landu Pai, Sibin, Solin, Doa, Doa, Isho.
it would be on the website
hongkong.org. This camera, please. One, two, three.
If you have already registered, please put down the name, so we will send you email or something like that.
I always write.
Can you send it to me?
Yes.
Yeah?
I will send you my email.
Send it, thank you.
Hỏi
tại
nào? Mấy mắt mấy tay mà sang kịp nó mất. Là thằng đấy mi nhân mi phòng ta. Để họ đặt cái gì? Anh ấy nét mệt khi khai thằng lúc. Lê khai. Lê khai.
So we have some sweets. Yes, we have some sweets. So there is some we have some sweets. Some specialty. Oh, yeah. Sweet rice food.
Thank you.